Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's discussion. I'm Elizabeth Kerr with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. We're pleased to welcome Joe Hockey, the Australian Ambassador to the United States, and today we're going to discuss the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the future of trade in the Asia-Pacific. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for tens of thousands of business leaders from across the country. And at these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, senior executives at mid-sized companies, and small business owners all get the chance to brief policymakers on issues that affect their businesses and also how Washington can help businesses to accelerate the economy. To date, more than 550 senior administration officials, members of Congress, governors, and mayors have participated in our programming. And this is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, this call is on the record and there may be reporters listening, but that means that we will also be able to provide you with a recording of the call following today's discussion, which you'll receive in a follow-up email. Finally, I want to go over how you can all ask questions. This is an interactive briefing, so after the ambassador speaks, there'll be time for you to ask questions and share your advice. And you can do that in one of two ways. First, you can press 1 at any time on your telephone keypad, and you'll be entered into the queue to ask a question live. If you prefer, you can email us your question to info@businessfwd.org, and I'll just read that question aloud for you. When we call on you to ask a question live, please be sure to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. So again, if you want to ask a question, press 1 on your telephone keypad, or you can email us a question to info@businessfwd.org, and we will add it into the queue. So with that, please welcome Ambassador Joe Hockey. He's the Australian Ambassador to the United States. Welcome, Ambassador.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, and what a great honor it is to be a guest of Business Forward and hundreds of people around the United States who have taken the time out of their very busy schedules to be a part of this conversation. I'm relatively new as the ambassador to the United States. I was for 20 years involved in politics in Australia at the highest levels. And what I've discovered is that the values that have served America so well since Woodrow Wilson gave that famous 14-point speech in January of 1918, the values that represent freedom of trade and freedom of navigation across the seas, the rules upon which the United States would engage with the rest of the world come out of its period of isolationism, those values are widely shared across the United States and increasingly widely shared around the world. The United States is not only the world's economic leader and military leader, but in many ways its values leader. And those values have been based on the concept of freedom, of enterprise, of family values, of innovation, of people being prepared to take control of their lives, to be the controllers of their destinies. And that's one of the reasons why so many of us, including people in Australia, have gone out and set up their own businesses or have had a go in establishing new technologies to try and build a safer, more productive environment for themselves and their families. So I just want to lay that down as an opening statement. Australia is the only nation in the world that has fought side by side with the United States for 98 years. Every single major battle the United States has been in, we've been by your side. And of course, there are 150,000 dead American soldiers buried in the sand between Australia and Japan as a result of the horror of World War II. So the American engagement in the Asia-Pacific region is not new. The president talked about a pivot or a rebalance towards the Asia-Pacific, but there's a long, long history of American engagement in the Asia-Pacific, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership is just the modern manifestation of that relationship. from the time the Great White Fleet travelled around the Pacific region back at the beginning of the 20th century, the United States has seen massive opportunities for its own people, for its own benefit, in engaging in the region. Now, I first went to Asia when I was very young, 13 years of age. I remember going to China in 1978 when there was no building over four stories high. Everyone wore green suits or blue suits. Everyone was riding a bike. There were no cars. And then I went back as Treasurer of Australia, the equivalent of Jack Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, and as Chair of the G20, I went back and I'd witnessed the greatest transformation in the most number of people in the history of humanity. There is a deep desire, not just in China, but right around the Asian region, to have what we have, a quality of life where our children can have excellent education, excellent health care, you can have a judicial system with integrity, you can take control of your lives, take it out of the hands of government, and be in some way a controller of your own destiny. And as Australia has seen, has witnessed that change in Asia, we, like the United States, have overall been a beneficiary of it. China is now Australia's biggest trading partner. And last year, for the first time, China became our biggest year-on-year investor. However, the United States is the biggest investor in Australia, full stop. And our strategic relationship and our values relationship with the United States is deep and abiding. But what we're witnessing in Asia is the emergence of a massive middle class. Now, in the United States, around two-thirds of the economic growth across the economy comes from household consumption. In Australia, we call them Mr. and Mrs. Stringbag. But in truth, they're middle Australia who go out and spend the money buy the goods that keeps the economy going. The blessing for the United States is that its innovation spreads right across the economy in a whole lot of different sectors. Of course, there are parts of the United States that have lost a significant number of jobs, particularly in manufacturing, as is the case in Australia. And I had to make some really difficult decisions as Treasurer, including stopping government funding for the motor vehicle industry, which cost a lot of people their jobs in Australia, but it was something Australia just can't compete with, particularly compete with the United States in manufacturing of cars. So we've got to go to where our strengths are. And the strength of the United States in innovation, particularly in biomedical, pharmaceutical, in information technology, in military technology, in every single area of endeavour, the United States is a world leader in innovation. And so as this middle class of over 3 billion people emerges in Asia over the next 15 years, they're going to want what you produce. They want your Amazons, your Lockheed Martins, they want the pharmaceuticals, they want your education, they want to buy it off you, they want to buy Disney Films, they want Bechtel to go and build in Asia. They are flying Boeing planes, they want IBM machines with Microsoft technology, and they want General Electric innovation, they want 3M innovation. It goes on and on and on. And I could name off the top of my head, 20 US companies immediately that have a massive footprint in Asia. I could mention maybe two Chinese companies that have a footprint across Asia, maybe a dozen British companies. But the fact is, America is better positioned in the Asian region than anyone else ever has been for the fastest growth over the longest period in the history of humanity. Two-thirds of the world's economic output is coming out of the Asia-Pacific region. And as all these countries start to develop their economies, such as Malaysia, Vietnam, and of course the countries that aren't part of the TPP, the massive growth center of Indonesia, India, which will also, with Indonesia, probably be in the top six economies in the world by 2050. I mean, you are incredibly well positioned. Australia has free trade agreements already with China, Japan, Korea, and a number of other countries in the Asian region. And Chile, which is also a signatory to the TPP, does as well. But the fundamental point is that the TPP defines the trade rules of the Asian region, and they are based on American experiences and American laws. Let me be very clear. Asia is not going to wait. If either we end up with rules of engagement for trade and economic activity in Asia that are based on the principles that America and Australia share, or else there will be alternate agreements that will be signed by Asians with Asians, excluding the United States and others. And the agreement I'm specifically referring to is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which involves a whole lot of Asian countries and no American countries. That will set different rules. And the people that will lose out of that in particular will be the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of American workers that work for global companies and aspire for their own companies to engage in Asia. They will find it much harder to get into the region. The second point is, it is hugely important from a strategic perspective that the TPP gets through. It is about whether American values are going to continue to have a role to play in the Asia-Pacific region. Ash Carter said, as Secretary of Defense, that it was the equivalent of having an extra aircraft carrier for the United States in the Asia-Pacific region. The fundamental point is that the countries that have signed the TPP, such as Japan, Australia, and Singapore, Vietnam, Malaysia, we want the United States deeply engaged in the region. We're doing our bit to help. There's no doubt about that, but we want you engaged in the region for mutual benefit. If you benefit, we benefit. And we have the rules that have served us well, built prosperity in Australia and built prosperity in the United States. Now, I'm sure there are many questions. You don't want to hear from me anymore, I'm sure, just in relation to the opening statement. But finally, I'd just say this. If I may be so bold as a foreign ambassador to say this, you guys live in the greatest country on earth that has had the most profound impact. I mean, of course I see Australia as the greatest country on earth, but I want you to know when it comes to the global league table, you guys have the biggest economy, the biggest military, the greatest innovation, a huge population, and you are the defenders of values. In blood, you've defended the values. The values of freedom and democracy and enterprise and family. We stand by you in the defense of those values. And it's not just with a gun that you stand by each other. It's by words and deeds. If America is at the moment a little uncertain about whether the things that have served it well for so long are appropriate for the future, let me tell you that the rest of the world, the sensible world, has no doubt that American values must endure, the values that I talked about. So whatever the outcome on the discussion on the TPP, I want to thank all of you for what you do every day, for the sacrifices you and your families have made for many others, not just in America, but obviously around the world, and certainly for the last 100 years. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ambassador. We're going to move to a Q&A now, but I want to remind everybody how you can ask a question. We do have a few folks in the queue, but as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question live, just press 1 on your telephone keypad and you will be entered into the queue, or you can email your questions to us at info@businessfwd.org. Our first, and when we do call on you to ask a question live, please remember to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. Also, I forgot to mention this earlier in the call, you can follow the ambassador's comments about this call and afterward. Follow him on Twitter, and that's at Joe Hockey. So I'll remind you of that at the end again. Our first question comes from Toby Malachi. Toby, you should be your line should be open.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Mr. Ambassador, my name is Dr. Toby Malachi. I'm founder, global chief executive of Malachi Group Worldwide here in Indianapolis, Indiana. I must say, Mr. Ambassador, that our second deal ever in trade was with Australia and New South Wales, and one of my very, very best friends lives in Queensland, and I love Australia and just love the partnership that we've enjoyed in doing business. So thank you very much, sir. I just got off the telephone. I'm also the vice chairman of the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service, U.S. Department of Commerce, Indiana District Export Council. I just got off the telephone with our Secretary of Commerce, Penny Pritzker, talking about TPP and what we need to do to ensure its success for the President and for the balance of the TPP countries, the other 11 countries. My question is, sir, is that my concern as an SME leader is that, and TPP, and those on the call may know this as well, China is making an all-out push in the ASEAN and Asia region. And they already have formed agreements with three of our TPP countries, at least three, Malaysia, Singapore, and Brunei. Any thoughts on your side on helping we SMEs here in the USA to get that message to your SMEs in Australia so that we can so see that TPP is a must for SMEs? I feel that we are the greatest job creators in this country, and in the U.S., 95% of our customers are outside the U.S., and we certainly enjoy the great partnership with Australia and your leadership, sir. Thank you very much, and my favorite words are, have a successful day and think globally.
Well, thank you so much, Toby, and thanks for investing in Australia. There are more than 300,000 jobs in the United States that are supported by exports just to Australia, and we're only a country of 24 million, but we have a very deep relationship with the United States. In fact, last year, interestingly, the United States overtook Japan to become our second largest trading partner. So the United States engagement with Australia continues to grow. The fundamental point is, if the Chinese, you know, we've been buying a lot of Chinese goods. Australia is no different to the United States. But as we see the emergence of this middle class, they're going to start to buy the things, more of the things that we produce. That's pharmaceuticals, advanced manufacturing equipment, the software that comes out of all parts of the United States. There's a stereotype about it coming out of Silicon Valley, but whether it be Austin, Texas, or North Carolina, or Boston, or many other places, they're going to want to start to travel to our countries, which means they're spending money here. They're going to start to buy our educational services, not necessarily even just going to our universities, but in particular buying some of our curriculum, and our students have greater access to work rights in China. So China, the thing that is driving China is a demand by its massive population to have a better quality of life. And, you know, this is not the place to discuss security issues in particular. But on the many occasions that I've been to China, they want a better quality of life. The everyday Chinese person, the most sacred thing in their lives is their child one. And for a parent or parents that have only one child, my God, you know how precious that individual is for you. And they want the best for that child. And we, the United States, Australia and others, can supply them with the best things in the world that at the moment they can't supply to their own people. And we're good at it. And that's why we need this deal. The TPP deal is about making sure that our companies, our exporters, get a fair go entering into markets. Now, China is not part of the TPP, but what you've seen is other countries in Asia, like Vietnam, like Malaysia, and a number of others want to join the TPP as well, like Indonesia, the Philippines, Taiwan, Thailand, and Colombia from America. They want to join as well. And it is about having better access to markets and breaking down the barriers. The demand that's going to come out of Asia, excluding China, over the next 20 years is probably going to outgrow China.
Great, thank you. Thanks for that question. Our next question comes from Liz Goldsmith. Liz, your line should be open. Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, thank you very much, Ambassador. I liked your comments about TPP. I own a clothing business in Florida, and also I write about international retailing. So my question about TPP is, will the vote take place in America before the November election? Or do you think they're waiting until after that to make the decision to join?
Liz, it's a great question. I don't have the answer. I mean, I think you'd need to consult with others, but I think it's pretty clear that President Obama rightly is going to proceed with it. And you know why it is important in particular? I know that former Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump have both said they're opposing the deal. But the United States government entered into an agreement with 11 other countries. And everyone sits down and enters into those discussions in good faith. And then we have to go back and convince our parliaments and our people that it's the right thing. The angst and anxiety in the United States is not exclusive to the United States about free trade. I get it. We get it in Australia and writ large. And every other country gets it. I mean, a number of these countries are right out on a limb. But they enter into the negotiation and then they go back to their countries and say, right, this is the best thing we could possibly do. Now, where there is a moment of disagreement between the Congress and the President and other countries on this sort of thing, there is no renegotiation of the TPP. 11 other countries have gone through the political pain and are going through the political pain of getting it through their parliaments. So if this doesn't get through the Congress, not only is that going to reflect poorly on the United States, but it will also have some impact in our own countries. And it will mean that the next time you negotiate an agreement with the United States, you can't just believe what the President or the administration says. You have to go and do a lot of homework with the Congress. And that just makes it impossible to negotiate agreements in the future. So I sincerely hope that it gets through before the end of this year for both economic reasons, for integrity reasons, and also for strategic reasons in the Asia-Pacific region.
Thanks, and Liz, we'll follow up we'll include in the follow-up to this our four-page issue brief on TPP and the timeline, which will explain the need for the implementing legislation to be introduced in Congress before that vote. So so everyone can watch for that. Our next question comes from Kenneth Wengrad. Kenneth, your line should be open.
Good morning, Ambassador. I was also on that phone call with Toby. I'm the chair of the Regulatory and Legislative Committee for the District Export of Southern California. I also have my own finance company, and we finance international and domestic purchases, one of which we finance an Australian company, an apparel company that's shipping to the U.S. For Kim Kardashian. And I agree exactly what you say, and I'm talking on behalf as an entrepreneur. And as you know, and small businesses represent most of the exports in the United States, come from SMEs. About 95% come from SMEs. And yet, we're going through these other issues. And what I find so interesting, you would talk about Woodrow Wilson. In 1904, Winston Churchill spoke to the Manchester Free Trade Group and said the same thing. We don't need protectionism. We don't need tariffs. And nothing has really changed in the world. But what has happened, and we're 100% pushing for this TPP, realizing the things that you're mentioning. But this is really the first time, and I mentioned this to the Secretary earlier, Madam Secretary earlier, about post-truth politics, you know, where they're coming up, these politicians and the people are relying on assertions that make them feel true, but there's no basis of the fact, and we're having difficulty combating that, you know, and it's been a difficult task, and it's really sitting with our U.S. legislators on both sides of the aisle. And that's the most frustrating thing, because entrepreneurs like myself, we recognize with or without TPP, we have product, we have service, we're going to do business because people want our merchandise or our finance, our services or whatever. But the TPP is such a comprehensive trade agreement that makes our lives so much easier. And the irony of this is that there were more jobs gained through these FTA free trade agreements, starting from Israel, that we have lost to NAFTA and the others. So the rhetoric is so disgusting, especially with social media. So if you have any ideas how we can combat that, you know, we're here to listen. And to me, and I'll close on this, this agreement is not only U.S., it's agreement of rule of law with good, honest people, and we see Vietnam changing dramatically, you know, and bringing themselves up so they can participate. So anyway, that's, you know, if you have any thoughts on that, please let me know.
Okay, well, thank you, Kenneth. look, my father migrated as a refugee to Australia on the 3rd of September 1948. He didn't have any skills, and he set up a corner store in Sydney, a delicatessen. And he always said the customer is right, and the more customers he can have, the better. And over the years, you know, he's in his late 80s now, he's sort of witnessed the potential customer going from the person that walks outside the store to people all around the world. And that's thanks to technology and the internet. You know, no longer do you need someone to walk past your shop front. You can actually do it anywhere in the world. And Liz before writes about international retailing. You provide finance internationally. I mean, you can do it from your desk at home, from your lounge room. It means the startup costs for small business are a hell of a lot less than they were for my dad in 1948. The fact is that if you're expanding your market, if you want to go into other countries with whatever you produce, it's far easier to have one set of rules than to have 12 sets of rules or 11 sets of rules. It's just the same. You know, we talk about retail. Okay, I confess, I go on eBay. I shop on eBay. I'm buying from thousands, potentially millions of potential sellers, of potential small businesses on eBay who each have a platform and a common platform that allows me to buy their goods, and that makes it a lot easier for us to transact. Well, the international trade agreements are exactly the same. As long as people play by the rules, and the US is vigorously enforcing the rules, it is far better to have people stick to international rules than not stick to them, and it's far better to have people sign up to international agreements that have rules. So the 12 countries that participate in the TPP agree to have a set of rules, and if there's a breach, there's a punishment. And the fundamental point is that if you have one set of rules, everyone gets a chance to compete on a level playing field, instead of having some of the disadvantages that occur where there are no rules.
Thanks. We're going to go to an emailed question now. This is from Philip Pittsford, and he's asking, how has the rhetoric during the American election cycle about TPP affected Australian perceptions of the agreement?
Well, gee, that's a good question. You know, I'm just a new diplomat. I mean, I was 20 years in politics, so I have to continually remind myself to be diplomatic, and I'm doing that at the moment. But, look, I think it's American values that have a much greater influence on us and every other country in the world than sometimes the words in the heat of battle in an election campaign. And from our perspective, we don't want America to confuse us or anyone else in the world about its values, because they're the values that have made the world a much safer place over the last 100 years. They've helped to build enormous prosperity for people everywhere, in particular in America. So for this brief moment during the election campaign, America might be asking itself whether the values that have served it well for the last 98 years that have helped to build prosperity, including for the, you know, one of the candidates in the campaign, maybe helped to make, you know, those free trade rules have worked really well, helped to build prosperity. Well, I say amen. Let's all agree to that, and let's continue with it and promote it, because, you know, despite the static of an election campaign, I'm confident that America will continue to be at the forefront of global arguments for enterprise, freedom, democracy, and the concept of giving yourself every chance to improve your quality of life.
Thanks. Our next question comes from Ravi Kumar Srinivasan. Ravi Kumar, your line should be open. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hello. Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Ambassador. I really appreciate the time you're spending with us. On the TPP, you mentioned India being one of the largest, sixth largest economies going to be in the few years to come. My question is there any effort from Australian point of view to improve the trade relationship or trying to bring in India as one of the force to the TPP itself per se, or in the regional security, regional cooperation movement kind of thing from which Australia is looking into?
Yeah, it's a good question, Ravi. Look, India, Prime Minister Modi is very keen to have a free trade agreement with Australia. And when in my previous career, I had a number of discussions with Prime Minister Modi about that. India's growth is phenomenal, more than 7% growth per annum, and a massive demand, not just for resources, but for everything. I mean, I think India would be one of the three biggest markets for Facebook in the world, which is obviously American. So if you know, mobile phone, they've jumped a generation on phones, and the same extends to motor vehicles and a range of other things. So as you see the uplift of this massive number of middle class in India, their demand for goods and services out of the United States, out of Australia, will continue to grow. They have not shown much interest in joining the TPP, but they are certainly looking at negotiating individual trade agreements with different countries. You know, the world's gone from various, you know, angles of trade. During various decades, the view was that you've got to have multilateral agreements with many different countries involved. Some of those multilateral agreements just didn't get ahead. So countries impatient for free trade started to sign individual free trade agreements with other countries. And Australia and the United States did that. In fact, our free trade agreement is now in its 11th year, and the US is a big winner out of it, I must say, with a big trade surplus with Australia. So good luck to you. But we're not backing out of it, because we see massive benefits for Australia in the free trade agreement with the US as well. So it cuts both ways. India is still undertaking massive transformation in its economy, but sometime over the next few years, they may well want to join the TPP and a number of other agreements around the world.
Thanks. We've got time for a few more questions. We have another emailed question. This one is from Angie Fontaine, and she's the CEO of a forest farm located in Davie, Florida. And her question is, and we've gotten a few other emailed questions very similar to this. What will be the position of the Australian government regarding international trade if TPP is not approved by the United States Congress, and what might some of the next alternatives be?
Well, as I said, Australia has a number of bilateral agreements with Japan, also with Singapore, and we'll be looking for other bilateral agreements. But quite frankly, and to be really, really blunt about it, there are alternatives. There are alternatives. And one of the alternatives is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Now, what happened was, when this has been a negotiation by Asian countries for Asia that has been going on for some years, and India and China are part of those negotiations. When the TPP was signed with the United States, all of a sudden the negotiations started to pick up pace on the alternate Asia agreement. We want to have both. But the world won't be stopping and waiting for the United States to approve this agreement. Asia, including countries that are not part of the TPP but are extremely strategically important and friendly to the United States, like Korea and the Philippines and also Indonesia, they will be looking for another agreement in the Asian region that sets rules where we could all trade on a fair and equal basis, and China is determined to have a very significant say in that new Asia agreement that excludes the United States. It's one of the reasons why we are, as a long-standing mate of the United States, absolutely determined to do our best to get the United States over the line on an agreement that involves the United States in the Asia-Pacific region.
Great, thanks. We've got time, like I said, for one or two more questions. This next question comes from Frank Myers. Frank, your line is open. Go ahead and ask your question.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you, and pleasure to work with you. I am the president of Luchter Global. We are an international business development and high-tech consulting company in Scottsdale, Arizona. And one of the things I understand from earlier discussions about the TPP is that one of the big underpinnings of the agreement will be the ecological impact, so reduction of carbon footprint, pollution control, and this kind of things, as well as food and water supply concerns. In order to monitor what goes on in the world realistically and accurately, we need a monitoring system. And the only way you can do that at that level, I think, is from space. And so the question is, without having the ability to measure things accurately and yet require people to comply with the percentages that we have in the agreements, we cannot really very much endorse implement the system without that. So are there any provisions for that in Australia at the moment, or are there any plans for that?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, it's not just on tariffs and a range of other traditional barriers that the TPP sets a new standard. It is obviously in labor laws, in workers' rights, in environmental standards, and it lifts the overall requirement of countries that in a number of cases may not have the standards of the United States. Now, the key point here is that other countries are imposing some cost to their economy by joining TPP and increasing the cost of their wages and increasing the environmental and workers' requirements, rights requirements, right? Those high standards do cost money for other countries to get up to where the US is at. That means the US becomes more competitive because in some countries there may not be appropriate environmental standards at all. But under the TPP there will be new environmental standards that mean that American companies competing in Asia compete on a more even playing field. It so happens that Australian standards for workers' minimum wages and a range of other things are the same sort of standards that apply in the United States. And what we want is countries like Vietnam, Malaysia, and a whole range of countries in Asia to have similar high standards and therefore go through the same process. Now, in terms of enforcement, you know, there are a range of things that can apply, and they will be part of the implementation program. The enforceable provisions ensure that countries are individually held to account. There'll be constant monitoring of those enforceable provisions. And in an area that obviously, for example, Angie, who last asked a question, is involved in forest products, one thing that'll be happening, for example, is under the TPP, it'll be illegal to have timber harvesting where it is not approved by governments under set standards. And currently, there are some countries that might have unlawful or improper practices in relation to harvesting, which might give them a short-term competitive advantage against forestry products out of the United States or Australia. But over the long term, it doesn't give them advantage. But we're trying to get them up to the same environmental standards as we have, which means that our foresters can compete on a level playing field with theirs.
Thanks. And we're going to close out with one final emailed question from Richard Hughes in Sacramento. And his question is, does Australia have a similar approval process for TPP like the United States Congress? And if so, how does that work and what's that timeline?
Well, it's a good question. I think almost all countries require a deal like TPP to go through their parliaments. I think Malaysia's already passed it through their parliament. Japan is about to put it through the Diet under Prime Minister Abe, and the Australian parliament, even though we had to break for an election, is currently going through a process of approval, and it requires the approval basically of both sides of politics. But the fact is that both sides of politics in Australia recognise that free trade has helped us. It hasn't hurt us. There have been individuals that have unquestionably lost their jobs. There are individuals that have gone through a hell of a time. In manufacturing in particular, it's been very hard. But it's not going to get any easier to compete with countries that have no minimum wage. If those countries suddenly do have minimum wages, if those countries suddenly do have proper environmental standards, you know what? We become more competitive. We become more competitive. And the TPP actually introduces standards for countries that may not have those minimum requirements. The second key thing is that when you look around the world, The loss of manufacturing jobs is closely linked to developments in productivity. You know, China lost around 19 million manufacturing jobs between 1995 and 2005. Partly that was competition from countries with lower wages. Part of it was, obviously, improvements on the factory floor in terms of robotics and new technology. There has been quite a drop in the number of manufacturing jobs right around the world. So we've got to find new jobs in advanced manufacturing. We've got to find new jobs in areas that do respond neatly to the changing global economy. And Australia and the United States are well positioned for that. I mean, the US in a number of ways, even more so than Australia. So I'm very positive about that. And given, Liz, this is the last question, I just want to thank all of you for what, as I said before, not only what you've done as Americans in the past, but also what you do each day, you know, helping to go out there and have a go. A lot of businesses are family businesses and involve, you know, husbands and wives, sisters, brothers, children, parents, and in many cases with small business, everyone is has to be an expert in everything. You can be both the bookkeeper and the IT specialist, the HR person, and the chief salesperson. So I've never been more excited in my life about the future of small business than I am today, because of what I said a little bit earlier, that you no longer have to wait on people walking in through the shop front door. You actually have the whole world at your feet. And no other country on earth has that opportunity more so than the United States today.
Great. Well, Ambassador, thank you again for your time. We really appreciate your expertise and perspective on this issue. And thanks to all of you from around the country who took an hour almost out of your day to join us, our call on TPP. If you haven't yet and you still had a question, please email that to us at info@businessfwd.org, and we'll help get you an answer. And after this call, you will get an email with a link to a quick survey, and we always appreciate your input to try and improve our programming and appreciate your feedback. That email will also contain a link to a recording of this call that you should feel free to share, and feel free to tag Business Forward and the ambassador, who's at @JoeHockey on Twitter, and you can follow him there, where there's also some tweets about today's call. Tuesday, Business Forward will host an online media training, so please check your email for that. You should receive an email invitation later this week. Thanks again to all of you for the call, and Ambassador Hockey for your time. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks.